Well, assemble our meeting to start, and we're going to start with the going to start and finish with historical issues. So we're starting with the Minnesota Historical Society update, starting with the overview of the appropriations. Mr. Kelleher.
Madam Chair, for the record, I'm David Kelleher from the Minnesota Historical Society. Thanks much to you and the committee for taking some time out of your schedule to hear some updates on what's going on with history from legacy appropriations last year. What we're going to do is just do a brief overview of the structure of the legacy appropriations and then talk about a select few of the projects and programs that we've been working on and others have been working on. And I would emphasize that this is really the tip of the iceberg. There's lots of other activities that I know that you saw on your visit to the History Center and then also your visit last fall up to the Northwest Company for Post in Pine City and Duluth and other things when you guys were on the road earlier. So we are happy to talk about any of the other projects and programs that we're not able to cover today, but we'll give you a taste of what we've been working on. Let me just take a quick minute and tell you about all the paper that we've distributed to you so you can follow along with what we've been doing. We've done a report that looks like this. For legacy activities for history generally in calendar year 2013, although there's a little lag time with grants and whatnot. The kids that are on the cover of this report are enjoying the Then Now Wow exhibit that I think most of you had a chance to see over at the History Center. And they're at the fur trade area learning about the fur trade and its connection to Minnesota's history, of course, but also the environment in which it took place with the North Woods in the background from there. The next thing I would point out to you is a sheet of paper that looks like this, looks like an org chart, and I'll take a quick minute to walk through that to let you know how the appropriations are structured and how you can track along. When you made appropriations last year, you basically put them into five categories. There are statewide programs operated by the Minnesota Historical Society. There's a grants program. There are partnership programs. And then you'll hear a little bit more about the archaeology survey and the Minnesota Digital Library program. So those correspond to the tabs that are on this report, so you can follow along the different categories that we have outlined here. The next thing I want to point out, so if we take the first category, the statewide programs operated by the Minnesota Historical Society, I'm not going to spend a lot of time on those today because you saw a bunch of those programs on your visit to the History Center and when you went up north. Those are projects that we at the Minnesota Historical Society carry out for the people of Minnesota. We follow along our strategic plan, which is this document with these kids enjoying or a kid enjoying History Day projects. This outlines our strategic priorities, which focus around educational achievement, diversity and inclusiveness, lifelong learning, historic sites, preservation, sustainability and stewardship, and content development. Those are the areas that we use to guide our design and development of programs that we use to serve Minnesotans. Our mission statement is using the power of history to transform lives, preserve, share, and connect. And that's how we think about the work that we do. We preserve Minnesota's history. We share it with Minnesotans across the state and with the goal of connecting them to their communities. And again, I'm not going to spend a lot of time, but in the first tab that says statewide programs, you can see the projects that we've worked on behalf of Minnesotans. The second thing I'd like to mention just very briefly is the grants program, and we talked a little bit about the grants program when you were over to the History Center several weeks ago, but just to highlight what we've been able to do in the grants program. The grants program has now, in the life of the Legacy Amendment, done over 1,200 grants in all 87 counties. The current year appropriation is just over $5 million each year of the biennium, and we have competitive grants process to distribute those grants. There's a citizens review committee, the Historic Resources Advisory Committee, that that helps to make the decisions on those. They take 2 days for each grant round and have grant applicants have an opportunity to speak to the committee, and then they deliberate and make tough decisions, just as you do. There's not enough money to go around, so they make the decisions on how to allocate those funds. So in total, just over $24 million has been distributed to grant programs since the start of the Legacy Amendment. So I just want to make sure we talked a little bit about grants before we move on to some other things. The next category is statewide history partnerships. And when that appropriation area was created, the goal was to encourage organizations to work together to share resources, both intellectual resources and financial resources, so that people could learn from each other and extend the dollars that are available. There's a listing of all the partnership programs that have taken place in the last year, but just to name a few, there's been support for the History Day program statewide. There's been a partnership with McAllister College to start a Somali oral history project, and there's been significant work with Minnesota's libraries on various other history activities. And we have a couple of people who've joined us today. I'm not going to get there. Michael Scott and Chris Olson from Selco and MELSA, respectively, to lend some support from the libraries, which have been great partners in the partnership category. The first group that's going to come down, if you guys want to get ready to come down, one of the partnership programs that we've really been proud of is the History Museum Fellows Program. We know that there are demographic changes coming in here in Minnesota, and we also know that our field in the museums field and historic sites field needs to reflect the face of Minnesota. So we have worked hard to create some opportunities for young people to experience museums and historic sites. Our model is to involve young people in the history field, and we call it progressive involvement. So it starts with having field trips and curriculum and our textbook. This is apart from Legacy, but our sixth grade textbook is produced by the Minnesota Historical Society to teach sixth graders about Minnesota history. And then a lot of students become involved with History Day, where they do an individual project to learn more about history. And then we have other ways that kids can be involved. The summer history involvement program, where young people can spend a week learning about what research is and what a college campus looks like. And then more intense, the Museum Fellows Program, which is a partnership with the University of Minnesota, where participants have a class and then have a summer internship and learn more about the museum field and ways that they can become involved. So I will invite these participants in the Museum Fellows Program to say a few words. And if you guys want to introduce yourselves.
Welcome to the committee.
Yes, good afternoon, Chair Khan and members of the committee. My name is Carissa Ontiveros. I'm a 2011 graduate of Johnson High School and a lifelong resident of the east side of St. Paul. I'm a first-generation college student at Hamline University and a former ACTC Museum Fellow. Last year, during my sophomore year of college, I was presented an opportunity in applying for the ACTC Museum Fellows Program. As a criminal justice major and a women's studies minor, I disregarded the opportunity, thinking it was not an opportunity that would benefit me throughout my college career and beyond. Due to a strong and welcoming MHS diversity outreach presence throughout the ACTC colleges, I decided to take on the opportunity in expanding my knowledge regarding museums and the understanding of how museums address the challenge of presenting diverse historical narratives. Plus, I have visited the Minnesota History Museum countless times throughout my childhood, and even as a college student, I found myself with the same excitement I had as a young girl, knowing that I was going to step foot into a museum. The ACTC Museum Fellows Program was an unexpected but challenging and life-changing experience. I have developed the skills as a critical thinker and have gained new perspectives regarding museums and the communities it represents, especially communities of color. Through this work, Minnesota and its diverse communities will continue to have their history shared and preserved for future generations. I, as a former History Museum Fellow, now have the opportunity in establishing a network and possible profession within museums, and have gained the experience and skills that can become valuable to me in any profession I choose to pursue. So thank you for the continued support in providing me and others the opportunity in learning the importance of history and what it has to offer to all people of Minnesota. Thank you.
Thank you.
Sure.
Next.
Hello, I'm Kristen Ross. I'm a recent graduate of, I was a American Indian Museum Fellowship participant in 2011. I recently finished my degree in history, English, and Native American studies from Morris, the U of M in Morris. And when I applied to the fellowship, I was actually doing National Student Exchange in at Humboldt State University in Northern California, and I had been working at the Blue Lake Museum as well as with the Tribal Historic Preservation Office for the Bear River Ronerville Rancheria group of natives out there. And so when I applied, I thought it was just a perfect fit for everything that I had been studying. And just like her, it was a very challenging experience. I think my favorite part was being able to connect with other natives, native college students that had similar interests as me. But there was also challenges to it where it's interesting to see your history presented from an outside perspective, which is why I think the program is so important. It gives them native communities a forum to sort of present their history, or at least participate in the presentation of their history, as well as to correct or maybe help facilitate better communication between tribal communities and the surrounding areas that they're within. Because I've come across some interesting ideas about Native peoples over the years. More importantly, what I learned was there's a lack of Native people with the adequate knowledge or interest to let's say, run a tribal museum or even just curate collections and stuff like that. So it definitely fulfills a need in that area as well. And I think one of the things I really enjoyed about it is it sort of shifted history from being a passive, learning history from being a passive experience to one of participation. And I think the MHS is doing that in more general terms as well, just having people come and interact with their exhibits, the space, and the information. And that's pretty much it. Thank you.
Thank you. Next.
Thanks, Kristen. Hello, everyone. Thank you for coming here today and giving us your time. My name is Jennifer Warner. I'm from Bemidji, Minnesota. I just graduated with a art history and cultural resource management degree. I took part in the National American Indian Museum Fellowship Program in the summer of 2012. Before that time, I had no experience with museum professionals or really professionals in any field. I had no idea how to behave in that setting. I definitely had the talent and the education, but what happened when I took part in this fellowship is that I was blessed with this opportunity to make connections with people who are so significant to Minnesota history and really grow as a person and become a valuable tool to my community. So, like they said, we traveled a lot. We spent time with amazing people in amazing places in Minnesota that are being preserved and cared for and shared with the rest of Minnesota. And the reason I came here to speak with you guys today, you know, took work off. It's very important to me to let you know how important these legacy funds are to this program.
like I said, I'm from Bemidji. We're very rural. We don't have the museum institutions. Like, this was a rare thing for me to be able to come and take part in this. I know that people who grow up in the metropolitan area, I mean, maybe take that for granted, that you can go to a museum, check it out, get used to the exhibits, and speak with people. For me, that wasn't really an option. And like I said, that this fellowship changed my life, and it will change the lives of people in my hometown. I'm going to... Sorry, I'm trying not to be emotional. Like, it's hard to tell you how important this is. Like, I'm going to take these things that I learned and these connections that I've made and this empowerment that my story may not be the biggest and brightest story, you know, rural town, but it's significant. It's so important to Minnesota history and preserving the Native people's story, and being able to share that with people who may not understand is incredibly important. So now that I've told you all that, I would actually like to just take a second and answer any questions that you guys may have for us, because I'm sure that you must... We probably didn't cover everything you need to know. Okay. Does anybody have any questions?
Are there any questions from any members of the committee or any comments?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And no particular question. I just want to, you know, commend you for your interest in history and, you know, never apologize for getting emotional about history. When I was a teacher of history, you know, my students sometimes got emotional, but it was normally after a test. But no, I, yeah, no, they're cheering the lectures. But seriously, I do want to, you know, congratulate you and commend you for your interest in what you're doing. I think, you know, remembering the past is a very important part of our present.
Well, thank you, sir, and I do appreciate that you guys are all on this committee. Yeah. This is incredibly important to Minnesota. Thank you.
Okay. Any other? Thank you very much. Really appreciate your coming down and sharing with us.
Madam Chair, one of the other important aspects of history appropriations in the legacy world is historic preservation. The constitutional language says that one of the purposes is to preserve Minnesota's history and cultural heritage. So the next two presenters will talk about a couple of different aspects of historic preservation. Doug Gassick and Megan Elliott, if you want to come down and get started. Doug's going to talk. Doug is the head of the Preservation Alliance of Minnesota, and he's going to talk about a couple of efforts he's been working on. And then last year, you heard some testimony from the Northern Bedrock Conservation Corps, the group that wants to get young people out in the field. As we thought more and worked more with those folks, we thought it would be helpful to have a business plan or a roadmap for where they were going. They've just got a tremendous amount of enthusiasm. They've got a great model with the Conservation Corps, but Megan and her crew have been working on creating a business plan, roadmap for what they would do next. So, Doug, you want
to... Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Doug Gassick, and I'm the Executive Director of the Preservation Alliance of Minnesota. And we're the only statewide nonprofit organization dedicated to the preservation and adaptive reuse of historic buildings in the state. Legacies assisted the Preservation Alliance of Minnesota in the creation of two new programs over the last couple years to further our mission to preserve, protect, and promote historic places in Minnesota. And those two programs are Minnesota Main Street and Cornerstone Academy. Minnesota Main Street is an asset-based economic and community development program. And we strongly believe that Main Street's best assets are the heritage and the people that occupy those places. Since 2011, Minnesota has designated six communities that fully embrace Main Street's nationally proven four-point approach for development. And those points are economic restructuring, promotion, design, and organization. The six communities in the state are New Ulm, Winona, Wilmer, Red Wing, Faribault, and Owatonna, and there's also 30 other associate-level Main Street communities throughout Minnesota. And just this last year, Wilmer became the very first nationally accredited Main Street community in the state. In the five communities, one of the big things that we do is we get to collect a lot of important numbers for to understand what's happening in these communities. And in 2012, in the five communities that were designated at that time, a net of 21 new businesses were created, and 77 brand new jobs were created in those five downtowns. Additionally, there were 41 building rehabilitations that were completed in those downtowns just in that short amount of time. Our newest legacy partnership program is Cornerstone Academy, and it just kicked off 2 months ago, so we're really excited about it. Cornerstone established four preservation educational series, one for realtors, another for homeowners, community, and professionals. In our first year, which is 2014, we're going to be focusing on the homeowners and realtors. The homeowner series is going to give property owners the tools they need to repair those reusable windows that they have, or give them the assistance to be able to find the contractors and parts and furnishings for the places that they treasure. A realtor certification is going to be the focus of our realtor series. We're calling that program Old Home Certified. Realtors are going to learn to research historic places, market older properties, and discuss preservation opportunities with prospective home buyers. We're actually launching our first special course for the realtors tomorrow, and it almost sold out immediately. Lastly, I want to tell you about PAM's deepening relationship partnership with the Historical Society. During the last year, we've developed mechanisms.
When you say, let me just interrupt a minute, sorry. When you say it almost sold out immediately, does that mean there was a charge for it, or did it sold out just by registration?
There was a small charge for it, because one of the goals with our programs is to make them sustainable over time.
Great.
So we can continue to work way off the legacy money so we can support it ourselves over time.
Okay, thanks.
Yep. So we've developed this great partnership with the Historical Society, and we've developed some great mechanisms to streamline the reporting for our contracts and partnerships that we have. So now we're really focused on deliverables and results rather than taking some time to do all the writing of reports, which is really exciting and benefiting everybody involved in the programs. So in brief, Legacy at the Preservation Alliance of Minnesota creates jobs through preservation development and improves the local tax base in Main Streets throughout the state. It's broadening and deepening the knowledge of preservation and providing the people with the tools to maintain their properties, which then in turn create vibrant communities in every region of the state. And it's streamlined to ensure positive preservation momentum is carried forward in our programs. Through Legacy, the Preservation Alliance of Minnesota has a stronger relationship with MHS and communities throughout the state. And we're creating a lasting impact using preservation as an integral tool in development in communities. So thank you for your continued support of this program.
Okay. Any questions, Mr. Grudge? Okay.
Thanks.
Keep going.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Megan Elliott, and I am the founder and principal of a company called Preservation Design Works. And we are a small business, mission-driven business dedicated to increasing the use of historic buildings and structures. We are currently leading the feasibility study and development of a business plan for the Northern Bedrock Conservation Corps in partnership with the Minnesota Historical Society. The legacy funds have allowed us to work on this project and bring together a small team of consultants to ensure the success and sustainability of this program. We structured this project to be a 15-week project, and we are currently just about in the middle of that project, and we've just completed what we're calling the first half, the first phase of this plan. And that first half was dedicated to basically gathering data, researching other organizations, and putting together the foundational elements of creating this business plan. So some of the things that we've been doing recently, we just completed an online survey, and this was used to determine the potential market for this program, the demand, project types, needs for this program, geographic areas, and price points for these services. We are also wrapping up interviews with potential project hosts. So these are people that would be interested in using the core services for their historic preservation projects. And these interviews were used to further develop and refine these products and services that might be needed, as well as to figure out the logistics of using a core type model to service these projects. We are in the midst of reviewing other like organizations to see how they run their business. Some of the important information coming out of these, and we're typically looking at other core models as a precedent for this organization. We're looking at their operating models, their financial performas, the challenges they faced in startup, as well as their biggest operating challenges, basically to learn lessons from them as we put together this business plan for Northern Bedrock. And as I said, we're now moving into the business plan development phase of the project, which will take us through approximately the end of April. And that includes a schedule for implementation for Northern Bedrock. This project in particular, I think, has an interesting relationship with legacy in Minnesota because it has both the immediate impact of using this core model to service historic preservation projects, then also has the potential for a geographic and time extension as you imagine these young adults that are gaining preservation trade skills that they will carry with them far beyond the projects that they're working on. So I am certainly open to questions, and thank you on behalf of me, my business, my team of consultants, as well as my clients, for your support of this program.
Okay. Questions? Comments? Okay. Thank you.
Madam Chair, the next presenter will be Valerie Horton, who's going to give us an update on the Minnesota Digital Library project.
Hi, I'm Valerie Horton from the Minitex Library Network, and I'd really like to thank the committee for the opportunity to talk about a project that I'm personally absolutely passionately in love with, and I hope I can share with you why I think this project is extraordinary. The Minnesota Digital Library, MDL for short, has 186,000 digital objects. That includes photographs, posters, diaries, oral histories, reports, pieces of historic legislation, speeches, magazines. We have over 30 different objects in this digital library. The collection is reasonably well used. In the last 6 months, we had just under 40,000 searches of the collection, but I think far more significantly, 10,000 of those objects were downloaded and used by people for History Day or for history research or for genealogy reasons or for anything that has to do with the history, the culture of Minnesota. We also are very proud that we had 420 interactions with our teachers' guides because we believe our resources are critical for helping in the education of the Minnesota students. The Minnesota Digital Library is truly unique from a nationwide perspective. There are many digital libraries in the country, but Minnesota has the only digital library that has 150 participating organizations. Most of the organizations in the digital library are historical societies, many of the small rural historical societies, many academic libraries, also public libraries, but we also have some wonderful and wild collections from other organizations like the Girl Scouts, the Iron Range Research Center, St. John's Abbey. On a personal level, the newsletters from the CCC camps in the Duluth area, where my father was an employee, so to be able to read that, it's just like my father's history is there for the world to find. It means a lot. I want to talk about one particular collection. This is a partnership between MDL and the Commission on the Deaf, Deafblind, and Hard of Hearing. We have extraordinary resources from the Charles Thompson Memorial Hall, the Minnesota Association of Deaf Citizens, and the Minnesota Academy of Deaf Alumni Museums. My favorite piece in this collection is the transcripts from a debate by Edward Miller Gallaudet and Alexander Graham Bell, where they called it the Great Oralism versus Manualism Debate. And this document traces whether deaf students should be taught by deaf teachers or by speaking teachers. You can find just these fascinating little bits of history within these collections. And probably the best thing about Minnesota Digital Library is that it is available to the world. We have a partnership with the Digital Public Library of America, DPLA, so every item added to our library is now available worldwide. And while clearly the vast majority of materials are used by Minnesotans, we have people from Japan, Scandinavia, Australia using our collections. So in conclusion, I just want to really thank you for the opportunity for the library community and the historical societies to bring these materials and make them available on a Minnesota and worldwide level. Thank you very much.
Okay. Any comments or questions from members? Yes. Representative McDonald.
Representative, thank you, Madam Chair. Just a comment. I appreciate your passion.
Thank you.
And your dedication to this endeavor. And it's infectious, and your gratitude is most appreciated, at least from this, from all of us here, I'm sure.
The library community is deeply grateful to this community from the bottom of our hearts. Thank you very, very much.
Okay. Any other?
What? Madam Chair, our last subject and our last presenter, unless there are any other ones, is a partnership between the Minnesota Historical Society, the Office of the State Archaeologist, and the Minnesota Indian Affairs Council, and that's the statewide survey of historical and archaeological sites, and Scott Anfinson's going to say a few words about that.
First of all, Mr. Anfinson, how long have you been the state archaeologist?
I tell people I've been in the state retirement system since 1975, but I've been the state archaeologist since 2006.
Okay, great.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, my name is Scott Anfinson. I'm the state archaeologist for Minnesota. I am an employee of the Department of Administration. Along with representatives of the Minnesota Historical Society and the Indian Affairs Council, I serve on the oversight board for the statewide survey of historical and archaeological sites. First of all, I'd really like to thank the committee, the legislature, and the people of Minnesota for their continued support of the statewide survey. It is indeed once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. In my lifetime, and it's been long in historic preservation archaeology, I've never seen anything like it. I would also like to thank the Minnesota Historical Society for their very competent assistance with the financial management of the survey. When the statewide survey was initiated in 2009, the legislature set up an oversight board to manage the survey. At our first meeting, the oversight board set goals and priorities. We determined that the most important goal of the survey would be to develop measures to better protect and manage important historic and archaeological sites. This would help streamline the cultural resource management process in Minnesota and save money by making that process more efficient. In order to accomplish our goal, we needed to first look at poorly known areas of the state, those counties with little previous survey had been done. Second, we needed to look at poorly known property types, the sites and structures that were not well inventoried. Finally, in order to assess which resources were truly worthy of preservation and thus management, we needed to develop better strategies for a more efficiently determining the historic significance of historic properties within their historic context. On the handout we have provided, there should be a handout in your packet with the legacy logo on it. There's first of all a list of the statewide survey projects that have been or will be completed by the end of the current biennium. These projects are carried out under competitive bid contracts as specified in the legislation. Over the last three biennia, we have completed 15 contracts, have four underway, will award a contract for the Minneapolis Parks Cultural Landscape Survey in the next few weeks, and will release two new RFPs in April for fiscal year 2015 projects. Nine of the contracts have been by privately owned firms, and 10 have been done with education institutions. On the handout, the list of projects is followed by some basic statistics and accomplishments of the survey, and then on the back we have a map showing all the counties where we've worked, done some field work. I would like to briefly highlight just a few of the recent accomplishments of the survey and how they address the goals and priorities of the Oversight Board, and we think of the legislature too. Under the Private Cemeteries Act, the state archaeologist has basic management responsibility for all burial grounds that are legally unrecorded and over 50 years of age. Prior to several of our initiatives, we knew that this included 12,000 prehistoric burial mounds and many, many hundreds of pioneer cemeteries. We did not know how many burial mounds still survived because many mound sites have not been visited by archaeologists for over 100 years. We also did not know how many European, Euro-American cemeteries were involved, as no agency in the state maintains a list of cemeteries, their locations, and their legal status. Using LIDAR, obtained under another legacy initiative implemented by DNR, we examined images of all known mound locations in the 16 counties with the most mounds. These counties once had at least 7,646 mounds and 651 discrete locations. Using LIDAR, we have determined that over half the burial mounds in these 16 counties are no longer visible. As for non-Indian historic cemeteries, another project compiled a database of almost 6,000 cemetery locations in the state, of which about half are officially unrecorded and are thus subject to some of my oversight. I get a call every day on an unrecorded cemetery. The Department of Administration may approach the legislature next year with some suggestions as how to better manage Minnesota historic cemeteries and how to conveniently make the data available to agencies, families, and genealogical researchers. DNR reports that Minnesota currently has more than 1,250 dams, of which 800 are publicly owned. At least $1 million annually is spent by the state on dam maintenance, as well as over $100 million will be needed to be spent.
Let me.
Excuse me.
Okay. Okay. All right, keep going.
I'm just about done.
All right.
Over $100 million will need to be spent over the next 20 years just to keep public dams safe. Some dams will be removed not only for safety and economic reasons, but for habitat restoration. Many dams are historic resources, and they are integral to historic settings. Imagine Northfield without its dam. Thus, dam removal must consider historic preservation factors. We did a study of dams in Minnesota and compiled a comprehensive database of 1,691 current or former dam locations. Our survey team visited 31 of these locations in 12 counties, including 12 mill dams, 9 WPA dams, 9 logging dams, and 1 irrigation dam. LIDAR proved essential again to locating and documenting the dam ruins. We then developed a framework for assessing historic significance for Minnesota dams. This inventory and evaluative framework will assist state agencies and cities in determining which dams are important for historic reasons and mitigation measures if dams have to be removed. I would once again like to thank this committee and the legislature for their continued support of the statewide survey of historical and archaeological sites. I would invite the committee to view the final reports, all of which are on the State Archaeologist website. I brought several example reports along with me today, including the dams and historic cemeteries. One, if you'd like to look at them, and I can leave them with you, and I'd be happy to answer any questions you have about the survey. Thank you.
Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Mr. Anthonson. What did you mean by the Department of Administration may approach the legislature next year about the cemeteries?
Representative Murphy, members of the committee, we were told this year would be the on session by the administration, because I'm part of the administration. I had some suggestions for the on session with regard to how cemeteries are dealt with in the state, which is very confusing, and so I get lots of questions every week on these. So I actually had a legislative initiative that I sent to the governor and the Department of Administration this year that I thought we might carry forward, and they said, this isn't really an on-session one, so let's save it for next year. So there are just, I get lots of questions from people of how do you deal with abandoned cemeteries, and are there any funds to help people restore cemeteries? And just, and of course, the Minnesota Genealogical Association wants the data of who's buried in cemeteries for their genealogists. And I say no one in the state maintains. I have the only database now of cemeteries in the state. And I'm only required to maintain the ones that are unrecorded, but I have all the other ones, too. So I think it would just be important to get this information out there.
Well, it's all right, Representative Murphy, continue.
I think it's very important, too, and I'm sure most people that has a loved one who has died in Minnesota and buried in Minnesota thinks it's an important thing, too, and we don't talk about it very much, and certainly somebody should know where the cemeteries are in each location, so, and each historical society as well, I would think. And so I'm anxious to perhaps receive your legislative initiative.
Well, Mr. Amphinson, mistake you made was going to the administration and not coming to us. Anyone who had a similar suggestion to me, I just told them how you made it an unsession thing, and it would have been just undoing the lack of knowledge about locations of cemeteries would have made it a perfect unsession issue.
But Chair, so, now you've gotten me in trouble with the administration. I'm supposed to be a good employee and go through the chain of command.
No, no. Well, that's all right. It's just a little advice of how to do it.
Madam Chair.
Representative Murphy.
And Mr. Anthonson, I'm really intrigued because we've dribbled out some money in various places for, like, the cemeteries that are connected to former state hospitals and things like that, and trying to identify the people. And we're not completed with that project yet either. But just an example, this fall, Carolyn, Representative Lane, came to Two Harbors to talk about different types of burial and caring for our loved ones by ourselves rather than calling in the funeral director kind of thing. And I thought, oh, do I want to go in the evening up to Two Harbors? It's an hour, you know, to get there. But I thought Representative Lane should have somebody listen to her when she's come all this way from New Brighton. And I got there, and the library was packed. The room for that was packed with people that were interested in the kind of funerals and her presentation. Different ways of caring for our dead loved ones. And that made me, and then we were talking about township cemeteries, and somebody in the audience asked the question, you know, where can you be buried without a casket or without, just rolled up in a blanket or a rug? Well, somebody said the Hermantown Township allows that. And I have since come to learn just half the cemetery can, you could do that in half the cemetery, but not the other half. Mm-hmm. And so there's all kinds of stories, and we've got to get together.
Right. Representative Murphy, I have to tell you, I get a call every single day about an abandoned cemetery that someone wants to either clean up or get someone buried in or something, and I help them with what I can, but I say, look at Minnesota Statutes 306 and 307, and you try figure it out, because I'm probably one of the biggest experts in the state, and I get baffled every now and then.
See, so it could have been undoing the confusion about Minnesota Statutes 306 and 307. Okay. Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Murphy, one of the places I haven't spoken much is in the northeastern part of the state, so you know, when I'm lined up there, I expect you to show up.
You let me know ahead of time.
All right. Madam Chair, Mr. Anfinson, first of all, thank you for the work you're doing. I think it's very important. Now, I know that there are a lot of archaeological sites across the state, and several of them are mentioned here. Is there any methodology as to how often they get visited and explored?
Representative Erdahl and members of the committee, I know you have one on your property that I've been remiss in not visiting, and you've invited me several times.
It was a hint.
And Dave Kelleher and I have been trying to work something out to come and see you there, and we'll work it out. We will. But no, there's no, most archaeology in Minnesota is done under contract because there's a development project threatening something, so an agency has to do it under environmental regulations. But, you know, besides the legacy amendment and a few things that colleges and universities can do, archaeologists don't have the freedom to go out and check on these. So even with the burial mounds, we had no idea. People said to me before we did the LIDAR project, how many burial mounds are left in Minnesota? I have no idea. But now we have an idea. We know that half are gone, and that's very important. So that's a good question, and the legacy money has allowed us to have the freedom to go do things we think are necessary, not just things that are threatened.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Burrow.
Mr. Amphinson, I heard, it's a family lore that when the archaeologist left in 1947, he said, "See you later." I just didn't know it takes so long. But also, while you're in the neighborhood, and just help me to understand it, if you could be helpful with this, on the west, I believe the west side of Long Lake, in western Meeker County where I live, I've run across a couple references to the sod fort on the west side of the lake. And this is part of the, in 1863 and 4, when patrols kept going through the area making sure that it was safe. Is there any way, using LIDAR or somehow, of locating where that fort might have been?
Representative Erdahl, all members of the committee, you can see the Pipe Lake sod fort, which is not far away and over by Cosmos. That shows up clear as a bell with LIDAR. I've looked at it, and I've actually done a little bit of looking over at Long Lake to see if I could find your sod fort, and I haven't seen it yet, but if I had a more exact location, I might be able to find it. But look at Pipe Lake. Pipe Lake, which is just down the highway, shows up clear as a bell on LIDAR, just clear as a bell.
Okay, well, thank you.
Okay, any other? Representative McDonald.
A question for Mr. Apheson regarding these cemeteries. I know of a gentleman who, out in southern Minnesota, southwest, Dawson, Montevideo area, is lifting up some of the tombstones that have fallen down. And he is paying attention to and helping some of the cemeteries. But what programs do you have for that? And is that funded? He's working through the state of some sort, because they're allowing some funds, actually. He's doing it on his own accord, but he is getting reimbursement for some of his expenses. So is there a program that initiates that helps repair old tombstones and forgotten cemeteries?
Representative McDonald, members of the committee, I'm not aware of any funding for that. It says, the state law says, under 306, which is the public cemeteries law, it states that townships may fix up neglected cemeteries, and counties may expend funds to fix up abandoned cemeteries. And, you know, what's the difference between neglected and abandoned cemeteries? It's a fine point, but it's townships can do one and counties can do the other. But I'm not aware of any funding at all to do that. And in most cases where I say, when people call me up and say, what can we do? I say, first find out if it's a recorded cemetery or not. If it's unrecorded, I can give you permission to go fix up the cemetery. But if it's recorded, it's not my call. So even then, they're... And what happens when cemeteries are abandoned? They're not, because they're tax-exempt, they don't become tax-forfeit. So who's in charge of abandoned cemeteries? There's usually no owner left anymore. They've gone. So who's in charge of this land? That's another legal question that needs to be answered.
Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Is there any software available that's just kind of a standard way to list the residents of the cemetery?
Representative Torkelson, members of the committee, there is the Minnesota Genealogical Society has done a lot of work on cemeteries. And they have a lot of the stuff online, and you can go into I was even searching for some of my relatives last summer, and you go in and wow, they have a photograph of every tombstone in the Brainerd Cemetery, and I found my grandpa and grandma's pictures of their tombstones in that cemetery. So there are private resources that are doing that, but I have to be careful. Under state law, it says that I cannot share cemetery data because it's security data for purposes of the state. That was one of the things I wanted to clarify. It says right in 307, the private cemeteries law, that cemetery data is security data, so I can't share it with members of the public, the locations, and that's kind of silly in a way. But it was done to protect Indian burial mounds, but to be a broadcast thing like that. So I want to get that data. And I don't keep track of who's buried there. I just keep track of the limits and where it is, and the Genealogical Society wants to keep track of who's buried there. But it's critical genealogical information and these tombstones are either deteriorating, the limestone ones, you can't hardly read anymore, and a lot of them are falling apart. And farmers are plowing up other ones because the machinery on farms is getting so big they can't make the gap between the cemetery and the road anymore. And I've got a case every year where a farmer is taking down the headstones because he can't get his equipment through anymore.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. Anfinson, I was wondering, are you aware that there are some bills floating around the legislature this year transferring, I believe, cemeteries from townships to ownership or maintenance of from townships to Indian tribes.
Representative Erdahl, I'm not aware of that, but I'll look those bills up when I get back to the office. But that would be good. And I haven't studied our study that we did of historic cemeteries. We intentionally dealt with non-Indian cemeteries, so we didn't get into reservation issues. So we sort of stayed off the reservation. Unless we found them in our literature, then we kept putting them in our database. But I do maintain another database of all the prehistoric Indian burials in the state, including burial mounds, which has thousands of entries in it, too. So I say I'm getting quite a big database for this, but I'll have to look at the bills. That's a good idea, but I wasn't aware of it.
Well, one of my attempts at going through a cemetery looking for things was the Père Lachaise Cemetery in Paris, and we made the mistake of going through there with kids who were very interested in finding Jim Morrison's grave, and of course totally uninterested in Colette and Chopin and Honoré de Balzac and things like that. And of course the previous people have now, there's graffiti all over the cemetery with arrows saying Jim Morrison this way, Jim Morrison that way, and so forth, which I don't think the proprietor, this is a while ago, so maybe they've taken it off now. But it is interesting when you Google the cemetery, if you Google, at least if you Google it from here, the first name that comes up is Jim Morrison. So I guess our family wasn't unique.
Representative Kahn, last time I was in London, you know, they have the big blue plates where it says this is a historic site. Instead of putting the bronze plaque, they use a blue plate. So I was walking over by my hotel, and I looked up, and it said, oh, this is where George Friedrich Handel lived when he was in London. And the plate right next door is, this is where Jimi Hendrix lived when he lived in London.
Okay, any other? Okay, we do actually have, as I'm being reminded, we have the minutes before us. Representative Erdahl. Have you looked at the minutes?
I have, Madam Chair. They're beautiful minutes. I move the approval.
Okay, Representative Erdahl moves the approval of the minutes. All those in favor say aye. Aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
Minutes passed. Are approved.
Is that a yes or no?
Right in the middle.
Oh, okay. Do we have anything else that we're doing?
Nope.
Okay.
Nope.
Oh, we do have a very important historic announcement to make before we adjourn. It's Andy Pomeroy's birthday today, so we would like to wish him a happy birthday. Yeah. Okay.
No.
We don't have to sing. Unless he wants to sing. Okay.
Madam Chair, thanks for the opportunity
okay.
to give you an update on history
activities. Meeting adjourned.